Hi, good evening, everyone, and hi, Alana.
Hello,
How are you
Friday.
today?
Good to see you.
Good to see you as well. So much has happened since we spoke last, Alana, that I think we felt it was very important to cover this. But I tell you what, just to start with, folks, if you do enjoy the platform here, make sure you subscribe to it. Now, look, you got to do this. You got to go and you got to hit the subscription button, or Alana and I will be coming around to have words with you, right? Do that. That's what I
Yes, we know where you live.
Yes, we do. Yeah, we've got the CIA have given us all your names and addresses, so we know where you live. So we'd really appreciate it if you could do that. And of course, if you do like the show, drop us a comment, thumbs up, subscribe, all the usual stuff. Right. So that's the first thing. Second thing is, Alana, I wanted to say to you that I was just looking back to the 27th of January, when we did a hard truth entitled Neocons, Neolibs, and NATO Inches Closer to, what's it called? Just get the
Nuclear
title.
war. Nuclear war.
Nuclear war with Russia. Yeah. So we were saying this back at the end of, well, over a month ago, well over a month ago, we were worried about, well, what we thought was potentially going to happen. And naturally, well, we've been proven to be, it's very, very disturbing what we see in over in Ukraine. And for me, I suppose at this point in time, how I feel about it, and we're going to get into the detail in a second, but
Tell me, Susan, what are you feeling, thinking?
I feel, and this is why it's really great to have you with me, because I kind of feel that this reminds me of February, March 2020. Whenever we were besieged by the media about images of people falling over dead in China, and this Spanish flu is the worst thing ever, and you people better do what we're told, you're told, stay at home, just 3 weeks, blah, blah, blah. And the conditioning, Alana, it's the conditioning of people, which we saw then, and it's happening now. Actually, I think even more so over Ukraine. And I want to explore this one with you, because I know it's been a theme in your writings for from the beginning, really, I suppose, since you became a columnist. And so we're going to talk about that. But I'm just overwhelmed. I cannot watch the media at the moment. Everything I see in the media, I assume is a lie. I mean, what's your feeling about
Well,
the media?
you know, you make a good point, David. I agree with you that this is definitely advocacy. Traditional, I mean, we're old enough, at least I sat in it. People say you don't understand what's going on, and your heart goes out for this awful thing that's been visited on the Ukrainians. But at least, in the 67 war in Israel, I was in a bunker. I know what it's like. 73 as well, and the Arab states who launched that war came very close to home. I mean, they literally caught us by surprise. So war is just, for those of us who've actually been in those situations. But you are right about the quality of reporting. I mean, I noted that Jennifer Griffin of Fox News went into advocacy mode. I would have I thought that the reporter should be enmeshed or embedded with embedded rather is the term with both sides and getting us correct data. Although let us not forget that whatever the data are, this is a war of aggression.
But I don't know what to believe. This is the problem. And I found, Alana, in the past sort of number of this past week, what I found is, if I've talked to friends in different environments and on social media, and they say to me, "Oh, you're pro-Putin." I'm not pro-Putin.
No.
But this is like they used to call, they've called us people like you and I anti-vaxxers, and we're not. And it's propagandizing language. And when people say to me, "Oh, don't you support the Ukrainian people?" I say, "Well, yeah, but which ones?" Well, yeah, and we'll get into this. What about the ones in
Well,
the Donbass?
yeah,
What
back
do
to
you know?
the point you're making about reporting. I mean, all I hear is that Russians are in retreat, burnt vehicles on the sides of the road. This is from Jennifer Griffin, chief propagandist for Ukraine, which I'm fine with. Just give me the truth. You know, it's all based on the say-so of Ukrainians. About 4,000 Russians are dead. Maybe 100 or 200 Ukrainians, you know, which sort of doesn't quite jive. And since when does one ask one side to evaluate the casualties on the other and then only report what that one side...
Agreed.
Report.
Yeah.
It's just, to your point, this is extremely one-sided. Not that I want in any way the Russians to be triumphant. I do not. But I would like to know the truth, but they always say that the truth is lost in the war. But our reporters, stateside and on your end, help that along, don't they?
Well, they really do. And so, I just want to bring up, and I just want to chat you through. This is the sort of stuff, folks, that we're seeing in sort of UK mail. If we can just scroll up, forget about that one. That's just the, but. Well, again, it's not. Is Moldova next? Oh, is Moldova next for Putin to invade? And then look at these headlines. Ukraine claims it has killed teams of Chechenian assassins plotting to murder Zelensky. And then Kiev, because we're not allowed to call it Kiev, remember? Kyiv Tower is hit by Russian bombs. So but that, blah-de-blah. Blah. And then look, what do you see? Keep going. Go up. Up more. Let's go up. No, but down, sorry. Scroll down, yeah. And then, look at this, Alana. Astonishing moment. Diplomats walk out as Kremlin minister says, talks at a disarmament conference. They've got items. Who could replace Putin? Another story. I condemn the leadership of Russia. You know, so just we'll leave it at that.
But, this is, I haven't seen that on...
Alana, it is just off the scale. Here's an amazing one.
Doesn't make sense, David, just to sorry to interrupt you. The Chechens are going to assassinate Ukrainians. Now, the Chechens hate Putin. He waged a 20-year ruthless war against the Chechen Islamist failed state. So Chechens are now working for Putin. These people have historic Alzheimer's, or they never knew their history.
Well, you're right. And I'll just finish in this one. The clip that you can see playing in the middle of the screen, this was at a press conference the British Prime Minister Boris Johnson held. I mean, Boris, who's now parading as a neo-Churchill, which takes away from awkwardness about Partygate. But anyway, this journalist stood up. As you can see, she's being hysterical. And she said, you need to impose a no-fly zone over Ukraine, right?
You know, David, it reminds me of Christian Amanpour stood up internationally and berated Bill Clinton for not bombing enough. Isn't it amazing how the women are so bloodthirsty, leading these sort of without calmly considering everything? And I just have to say this. I mean, definitely women are leading the most radical elements, whether it's COVID, whether it's lockdowns. And now you have to instigate no-fly zones and go to war with Russia, which we don't have to do. But what disgusts me too, David, and I have to say this, I'm a libertarian. I condemn this war of aggression utterly. Not that I don't understand the justification for war in the sense that there was a buildup, but utter ignoring of every single plea on behalf of Putin to be taken seriously in terms of his NATO, the escalation properties of NATO. NATO had become this everybody's welcome revolving door, you know, open door, basically. And then Biden and the team that negotiated from the EU and from the NATO parties absolutely discounted and belittled the man. So I can just understand the rage. I'm not justifying this, but there was a build-up to this. But what sickens me, David, is that we are watching, and Putin, and Biden, when he's not sleeping, he's watching war unfold and unleash on people ruthlessly in real time. Everyone's quite calm, reporting on this, on the horror, on the misery, how Polish and Romanian are stepping up, and the charity's fantastic. Do something, not militarily. Sit down with a man.
Yeah.
Kissinger used to call it real politic. You know, you negotiate with a person. But America doesn't have real politic, David. It has not a moral foreign policy, a moralistic foreign policy. In other words, if you are not like us, if you are not a pale shadow of us, we will decimate you. We will vilify you. We will not negotiate with you. And this idiot who's the toast of the town, what's his name? Zelensky. Toast of the town. Suddenly the default position is that, oh, he's a hero because he hasn't fled. Interestingly, the Americans are offering him the coward's way out. Credit to him, he isn't a coward, but not being a coward is not being a hero, right?
Well, that's right.
Man, David, as I'll just finish the point and let you comment on this. This man has mired his Ukrainian people in this situation. He lives in a very dangerous neighborhood. He shouldn't have been playing lobbyists to NATO, the EU, and Washington, which is what he was doing, hoping to galvanize them against the Russians. He should have been doing Kissinger realpolitik, sitting down with his rough neighbors and working out deals.
Well, you're right, and you know, again, from first principles, like you, the last thing I want to see is conflict and war, because we all know where that leads. So there's no ambiguity about that one there. But when you have Zelensky, as has happened to Lana in the last couple of years, he is speculated, well, maybe, you know, Ukraine in NATO, that might be a thing. He speculated about, well, could we have nuclear weapons in Ukraine? I mean, this is insane. And he's a clown. He's an absolute clown.
David, you're complimenting him. He hasn't just speculated. He's lobbied for these things.
Oh, true.
And I think Putin, in addition to this, the last attempt at negotiating, and I don't know if you read more details. There was nothing in our press. I don't know if you had anything in your press about the details of the Russian proposal and the comeback. The text, I mean, literally, it was via email that the Americans replied, oh, no, NATO is this kumbaya open thing. We're not going to negotiate with you at all. Literally, it was very demeaning to the man. I'm not justifying what he has done, but I can understand the boiling position at which he has arrived. Well, what do you think, David? I need to ask you this. The Russian bear is nuts. I mean, is deranged, is raging. I don't know if there's so much thought put into this invasion, but what do you think about years of Russia, you know? The grid fails in the United States, Russia. Birds fall out of the sky, Russia. Americans hate each other racially, Russia. Deplorables want an election, Russia. Deplorables elected a president, a Russian. What do you think about that? That's enough to drive a nation mad, I would think.
Well, you see, the way absolutely. And the thing is, I mean, it's Russia. So we can even detach it a little bit from Putin. Essentially, Russia has been set up by a bunch of, as you said, neo-libs and neocons, and NATO as well, because they're all the same, and as the fall guy for everything. And I see at the moment, Alana, is Europe actually is, because you talked about Ukraine has allowed itself foolishly to be caught up in this situation, but Europe, companies like Germany, actually in particular, are also, because they're pretty much run by the US, you know, they really are, especially since Merkel got out the door. They're also getting caught up in this, where 53% of Germany's energy comes from Russia. Well, yeah. How's that going to work out? It's still cold. Yeah. You know, it's still only March.
Why do you not want to trade? I mean, to libertarians, trade is the antithesis of war. So long as you're trading, you're not warring, you know, or you have less of an incentive to war. Why do you want to cease that?
Well, that's a good question, because we all know that Russia, for example, is the number one global exporter of grain. It's one of the biggest exporters of wheat, which we all consume in our different parts of the world. So why would we want to escalate this in such a way that we're going to damage our own economy? I mean, as much as we're damaging the Russian economy, it's mutually assured economic destruction, certainly for Europe, if not the States.
And what do you think of the imperative for Zelensky, who's being hailed by, look, we're run by imbeciles. My mother said to me, I mean, she's in Europe. She said, your president is a disgrace. He belongs in an old age home. We're run by imbeciles. The Europeans used to be a little bit more moderate and sensible about coexistence, but now they seem to be cowed by the Americans and the Anglosphere and women like the one you just showed me. But what do you think about Zelensky? He is a simple and stupid man, clearly.
Yes.
But if the onus was on him, why people are electing clowns, right? Leadership is a function of a certain segment of the population. That's democracy, which means a majority, you know, has sort of. Of course, and George Soros and all the machinations behind the scene, the Americans. You give me the background to his.
You see, this is the thing that annoys me. In 2014, under Obama, essentially, there was a coup, as you know, in Ukraine, and a relatively legitimately elected government was thrown, relatively, by Ukrainian standards, was thrown out, and a regime much more acceptable to Washington, the US political establishment, installed. And then we had the incredible corruption, Alana, we've seen with the Biden cartel, with Hunter and Joe. And what's really sad is Ukraine has had historical corruption issues. Rather than deal with them and try and make Ukraine a better country, the West, in particular, has absolutely maximized the use of that corruption in the case of the Bidens. I think Nancy Pelosi's son, if I'm right, also has got a job in with a Ukrainian company. They all the scions all work with Ukrainian companies. So it's, you know, so I find it really weird that people are saying we've got to fight for democracy in Ukraine. And I'm saying, well, hang on, you overturned democracy in Ukraine in 2014. So I'm sorry, I've got big issues across the board in this one.
So what we're seeing, at least on the networks, is a lot of support for this leader from the Ukrainian people. Are you saying that this is misleading?
Yeah, I'm saying, because people, again, great question, Alana. Yes, I'm sure there's support for some Ukrainian people, but I'd ask you, do you think that would apply to those Ukrainian people in the Donbass? Do you think in those two breakaway republics, do you think they support him? Because they sure as hell don't. So when people say to me, Ukrainian people, I have to say, well, which Ukrainian people are you talking about?
Yeah, it's a variegated lot, no doubt. And Belarus now is going to be helping Russia, no? Belarus, yeah.
Yeah, Belarus, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's on the north, right? The northwest.
Yes, on the northwest side, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But in that southeast region, here's a question. Don't you think that the people of the Donbass, in those two regions which have chosen, because they've, as you know, I think probably people watching us and listening know that for the last 6-7 years, those people in that southeastern part of Ukraine, they've been shelled by the neo-Nazis and the Azov battalion. They've had their water supply.
I'm not aware of those.
Yeah. So I don't blame those people saying this is not
good. They now are part of Russia because Russia's voluntarily are happy about being they're ethnic Russians and they are happy to be affiliated with Russia.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. I mean, the first thing whenever the new regime came to power in Ukraine in 2014, they banned Russian. That was the first act. The Russian language, which those people spoke. So I'm massively, I mean, I've got massive issues in this one. Yeah. I want everything to be peaceful. I don't want war. But when people say to me, do you not support the Ukrainian people? My response is, well, yes. And I support the Ukrainian people living in those areas, historical Russian areas, Alana, who want their independence, who don't want to be shelled, who don't want to be assailed by neo-Nazis operating under, I mean, you know, they called Putin Hitler. He's actually fighting Nazis. I find that kind of ironic.
Yes. Well, I do, to pivot to something all our pundits are saying, Sean Hannity said yesterday, he proclaimed that if one is a murdering thug,
yeah,
a leader who invades a sovereign country and murders innocent people, you will be removed, and you will, for the sake of the of a decent world, said a guy called Ben Cardin, a senator. Ben Asper also reiterated that. But I want to know, I mean, if Putin belongs in The Hague, and he might, then what about Bush, Genghis Bush, yeah, Cheney, Condi Rice? We had all those pictures I sent you for
yeah.
me.
Yeah.
For me, documenting the war in Iraq, I sent you some pictures of.
Absolutely. Can we just let's just bring them? We'll chat away. But
there
but
a lot of, I mean, thousands of those children I sent you, children whose torsos had been burnt away, known cases, thousands of these children. Who did this, Putin or Uncle Sam? Uncle Sam. So the hypocrisy of it is what is really galling to me.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, and Alana, this is why I'm so glad you're on with me, because I mean, you've written about this consistently for such a long time, and you know, wrong is wrong. It's not something that one can be selective about. And what you were writing back in 2003, there, for example, with that little child who'd been so horribly, charred.
Have you seen the? Oh yes, this one is particularly.
If we can bring,
and I think his name is Ali or something. He didn't grow his arms back. Just as Iraq is not a democracy and Libya is a failed state with a thriving slave trade, right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely, completely, Alana.
Putin
did
that, Putin. So it is the hypocrisy of the whole thing, David. As a matter of facts on Iraq, not counting children orphaned, women widowed, people plunged into permanent poverty because of that war that America launched, birth defects to environmental contamination. And this, I'm giving you a conservative estimation of the deaths. 2006 Iraqis, that's conservative. The Lancet puts it on your Lancet, the British magazine.
Puts it
at 600,000. The Iraq Casualties Project puts it at 206,000 Iraqis killed by the American invasion. And that's not taking into account the displacement, the refugees, and endemic poverty and a failed state. Right?
Yeah.
Libya, the same thing. So did we not find Hillary, that Harridan, shrieking? Her proxy in Libya with a French fighter pilots flying atop and American drones to cover for them.
Yeah.
They had patronized some rebel group, just like the late dastardly John McCain used to do. They dragged Gaddafi, a legitimate leader who had a country that was functioning, not a failed country, and a leader, a strongman leader, quite fitting to that area and that culture. They dragged him out of his car. He was on his way to Sirte, his hometown, and they lynched him on camera, and then they uploaded that to the peals of laughter and the hilarity of Hillary Clinton to YouTube. Is that civilized? America-sponsored actions?
I see. It's war crime. I mean, let's call it for what it is. It's war crimes, Alana. It's war crimes.
Well, if Putin is guilty of them, let's see. Bush, Cheney, and Colin Powell is in hell because he recently passed. And Condi Rice, who's very sanctimonious about the need, I suspect, for no-fly zones. Let's see them in The Hague with Putin.
Yeah, I completely agree. If you're going to be, that's right. But that's not the way the media play it, because the media play it. And in your articles, Alana, going back 2003, 2007, 2011, you know, you consistently talked about the way in which the media at all those points in history did not provide a balanced view, did not do their job. And that's exactly what we're seeing in 2022, Alana. You know,
that's a reminder. I mean, I remember Fox News and the heaving bosoms, the porn attractiveness of the Fox News presenters that sexed up this war. It was absolutely obscene, war porn. And I remember, I remember, because I quote these in columns titled on Pimps and Prostitutes, Murder by Majority, all these columns from 2003. Here you had, you went to a correspondent in Iraq, and she said, we have found Cipro tablets. Cipro was for anthrax, I think. I can't remember. Cipro tablets. And we think our Geiger meter went off here, so we found weapons of mass destruction.
Destruction, yeah.
So this was the quality of the embeds. They were in bed with the American military. You're absolutely right. I have to remember that.
Because I watched a reporter in Kiev or somewhere like that anyway, doing a piece to camera, and he had his helmet on, and he had the flak jacket and all the rest of it, breathlessly telling us about the situation. And behind him, there were people out for an afternoon walk. There were civilians out walking in this this alleged death zone, and I just thought to myself, it's kind of the media, Alana, they never cease to demonstrate to me how awful they are, and boy are they awful in this one. And they want the drumbeat of war to keep going because maybe it gets them views, I don't know, or clicks, maybe. But truth has gone missing. There's just no truth in this one. And that's why I want to, as a hard truth program, for me, one of the hard truths in this is that, yes, we know what Putin is. We know what Russia is. Of course we do. But NATO are they're a problem, I think, Alana. I'm going to put it out there. NATO's a problem.
And to me, the biggest war crime right now, other than what Putin is doing, waging a war of aggression on a stupid leadership, maybe, but a leadership that did not do the opposite, as far as I can tell, waging a war of aggression, which is absolutely and always condemned, is not negotiated. At least it was not his good sense that made him negotiate with his most powerful historic brethren, the Zelensky. The Russians are his historic brethren. It was not common sense and the need for the national security of Ukrainians to negotiate with Putin. But this invasion has made him go to Belarus and start negotiations. So this idiot's negotiating, but Biden and the EU and NATO, why are they not saying, let's have a ceasefire? You know, I'm old enough to remember that one thing you do in war is you first seek a ceasefire on behalf of the attacked population and both sides. Let's have a ceasefire now and let's sit down. You don't hear this. You just hear the joy of recording this misery lifetime on television. Front seat.
Well, one of the things you talked about in all those columns, and you, I know you've been putting out in social media, some of those imagery of young kids that have lost limbs or lost their lives and all of that. But what's disgusted me in the past couple of days is the media are gleefully reporting on the death of Russian troops, Russian troops, with glee. And to my mind, a Russian life is as valuable as a Ukrainian life, as a British life, as an American. All lives, to my mind, are. I find it morally obscene to watch them delight in the death of Russian, mostly men, I guess.
Let me ask you this. Don't you think that more than all lives are worthy, I guess in conflict where you see the aggressor, you would be less sympathetic with the aggressor. But the point, don't you think the point rather is that these people should be reporting even-handedly on both sides? They should have embeds with the Russian troops and these mythical Ukrainian troops. I haven't seen them, but apparently they're mythical. 4,000 Russian troops have died at the hands of Ukrainians, and they haven't managed to inflict any casualties worth mentioning on the Ukrainians. So, the reporters need to be giving us the facts from both sides.
Yeah, I agree, and you're right. We have lacked footage and reporting of some of these mythical battles and mythical attacks. And so a lot of stuff seemed, I mean, for example, we saw in the past number of days, and they were caught out on this, we saw images taken from a video game purportedly representing Russian jets flying over Kiev. We've seen footage from 2018, 2019 in previous conflicts. Now, you said it earlier, and you're right, and we know this. Truth does become probably the first casualty of war. And so you can't believe all that you see. But because you can't believe all that you see, that's why surely a wise head we'd call for, let's have a ceasefire, let's step back, let's be sensible, let's not push it further. But actually, they are pushing it further, because I don't see how this one, I would have thought it would have ended with a ceasefire between and some kind of third-party discussions and common sense. But ultimately, Alana, I'll put it to you this, that if NATO pushes up to that Ukrainian border with Russia, we are in for a very difficult time.
NATO's not intervening yet, are they?
Well, NATO talks about, I mean, I've seen stuff about NATO talking about its borders.
You mean giving him NATO membership, which means that then they can go there. Yeah.
And also, NATO now talks about NATO's borders. NATO doesn't have borders. NATO is not an entity, or is it? Maybe NATO is an entity. They didn't used to be. Back in the old days, it wasn't. But it looks like. So, I mean, I just think that I don't see any attempt to de-escalate, I guess is what I'm saying to you.
Which was the title of our broadcast, De-Escalate Now, in January.
We said it in January.
We said De-Escalate Now before we inch closer to this terrible crisis. What about the tens of thousands of people streaming towards the Polish border? That's surely heartbreaking.
It is tragic to see all of this, you know, and ultimately, and again, this is one of the reasons I think, Alana, you've been for such a long time, talking about the horrors of these kind of things and why we shouldn't be getting involved and escalating stuff, because ordinary men and women ultimately pay the price, not the elitists in DC or in Brussels or in London. They won't pay any price at all. Ordinary men and women, Russian men and women, Ukrainian women, men and women are paying the price. And as you say, back in January, we were saying, de-escalate, do not go down this road.
Where's our lovely graphic that the boss should bring up?
I wonder if we can, folks, just to demonstrate that we did talk about this one, and Alana and I both felt the same back in January, that we do not, there you go, neocons, neolibs, and NATO inches closer to nuclear war with Russia. We said that back then, Alana. We talked about the need to de-escalate. But all we've seen, Alana, is escalation. And worryingly, it still seems to continue. You know, the war machine, once it starts beating, is a horrible thing to behold.
Yeah, and the simple souls of the media are excitable types, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of compliments to themselves on their bravery. Always saying, oh, it's not about me, it's about the Ukrainian people, but look at me.
Look at
my helmet.
When do I get an award for my intrepid war reporting here on the front line in Kiev? But it does annoy me.
I'm old enough to, I keep harking back to my age, I'm old enough to remember when it was only Kiev. What's this Kiev thing?
I don't know what to know. I'm the same as you. Well, when did this happen? I mean, I thought I was on top of these issues. But all of a sudden,
Kiev.
I'll tell you what it is. It's virtue signaling. You wouldn't even call them journalists. It's a dishonor to journalists to call them journalists. But again, as I say, I don't know. So what's your expectation then, sort of to round this one up? So do you think we will eventually get to some kind of ceasefire? Or what do you think?
You know what happens? A lot of times the pilferers on our camp often go on television with a paucity of ideas. And they might watch our small podcast, which is always original thinking. Mm-hmm. like me or not, or like you or not. That's what we've done for a long time. And they will see that we're small and powerless, like the Ukrainians maybe, and they'll pilfer these ideas. And next thing you'll hear it on a popular talk show. Why aren't they something they've not thought of and not even contemplated? Because face it, America is this marsupial, this strange creature that lives in isolation and doesn't quite understand, you know, this Australian mammal that lives in isolation, doesn't quite understand war because it wages it on other territory. But at least I've lived through it. And the first thing I've always heard is ceasefire and bickering between Golda and Golda, who was our prime minister in 73, and the Americans. She was saying, not yet, we have to take Ariel Sharon was saying, I want to take Cairo, I've had it with this. And the Americans saying ceasefire, the first thing any responsible superpower says is ceasefire. And here you have this doddering fool, the senile degenerate. He's going to give us a State of the Union. I'm not even going to pay attention.
That's going to be that'll be interesting.
I mean, that will be a bit of propaganda, David.
But you, Alana, again, you've put your finger on it. You know, this regime, the Biden regime, and yes, we know he's a senile, you know, incompetent. We know all that. But there's people behind him, lots of people behind him, lots of, you know, puppet masters. And in fact, he's a very bad puppet, but lots of them. And back in 2015, 16, I'm sure you remember, Hillary Clinton was gagging for war with Russia. And no sooner does Biden get in, 12 months later, there's a war with Russia. I mean, how do you feel about that?
Well, just back to the point, I think that if they do, you know, what I was thinking of, if they do start talking about ceasefire, negotiating, picking up on what the idiot Zelensky, toast of the town, you know, heroic because he didn't flee. I know it's a tangent that I'm going on, but American media and Americans are pushing this morally inverse narrative or meme that he is heroic because he has not fled. In our history, leaders go out first to the battle, and now America is pushing this narrative as we'll facilitate your safe pass to a safer climb, but he's a hero. So once people start watching dissidents like us who are never part of any mainstream, maybe the sensible discussion, and that's a historic discussion, real politic, which is what Kissinger did, negotiations, ceasefire first, and then speak about the need to rebuild Russia to rebuild Ukraine for the
I agree. I think that's a really good way to finish.
No reparations for any other groups. Let them rebuild Ukraine.
And that's exactly where we want to get to. And you know, it's my sincerest hope that reason will prevail. But just to finish, you talk about that's how Zelensky's being presented in the U.S. media. Honestly, he's being presented in exactly the same terms in our media. And when I see the globalist media all saying the same thing, I'm sorry. I'm back in February 2020. They all said the same thing about the Wu flu and all of that back then. I believe this is coordinated. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand. I've got theories about why would you want to accentuate conflict? You know, do you want to get rid of Putin? Do you think that's going to end well?
That has to stop because that actually legitimizes the fear that Putin has.
Yeah.
They are now talking about openly regime change.
Yes.
Well, it sort of justifies why this man was petrified to have all these 28 NATO countries, all under Article 5, where the United States has to defend them, all these crazy neocons, neolibs, speaking about deposing and replacing Putin. So this has to stop, as well as the Russia vilification. But once again, you and I have pointed out that this is a reason for the Russian bear just losing losing his mind. But they won't, unless they, I don't know if anyone watches us, unless they steal our ideas, they definitely won't credit us because, you know, people are thoughtful. But David, you know, also someone who grew up in Israel in a time when the world was against Israel. In fact, we little even has as kids a jingle, "The world is all against us." We were singing, "Don't worry, we'll overcome." Yeah. Every day you hear this barrage, and it does drive you to hate people.
Yeah.
Now it's no longer the case. Israel every day was vilified about the Palestinians. Israel doesn't need to exist. They should have gone to all that stuff. And the United Nations always almost made it a religion.
Yeah.
Every Security Council
meeting
was almost a religious recitation. Yeah. Was opened with a condemnation of Israel. So vilification on an international level. The saving grace and why Russia is doing way worse than Israel did back in the day is that Israel was never vilified by the United States. Only the crazy bitches that we see trying to get Boris Johnson. There have always been those crazy bitches in America vilified Israel, but not the United States was generally pro-Israel. But Russia, America's against Russia, and the entire world is. Enough of this vilification. Get back to real politics. Negotiate, stop wars, and live with how the other people choose their own regimes.
Alana, if I can just finish on this note, you know, I mean, I've read and we've talked about the things that you've written over all those years on all those other conflict situations. Conflict in quotation marks, Iraq, Syria, Libya, all of that. And, you know, I don't know how you feel when you look back in your writings and you see what you'd written, and then you saw the folly of the fact that they didn't listen. They just went ahead, and so many innocent lives then lost, political chaos caused. There was nothing good came off it. And I would suggest, I can't think of anything good is going to come off this unless people listen to what, you know, we've been talking about, and maybe others will repeat our words, and we stop this madness before it ends in a mushroom cloud somewhere. Russia is a nuclear power, and they are vilified. People say, get rid of Putin and we'll put someone better in.
That's the neocon, neoliberal mindset that's just going to drive the Russians who are behind him. Of course, nobody's behind them. They all want us to, they'll greet us with flowers and bonbons, you know, and chocolate. Yeah.
The neocons annoy me. I'm very annoyed.
They are nascent. The neocons are nascent now. And they've got the jingoism going, and everyone's falling for their war battles, and it's hard not to. I want to just end on something funny. I saw the journalistic architect of the invasion of Iraq was one Judith Miller, if you remember that woman. She's now this honorary journalist everywhere, and she lobbed journalistic weapons of mass destruction from the pages of the New York Times every day. She followed the Bush Doctrine, which essentially I defined it then back in 2003 as evidence against a theory constitutes evidence for a theory. No smoking gun means that there was a hidden gun somewhere, or a plan to acquire a gun or a hidden plan to acquire a gun and hide it. That was the Bush Doctrine on on Iraq. So recently, this notorious woman who collaborated with one lobbyist, just like we have, DC is just infested and festooned with Ukrainian lobbyists. Chalabi was the lobbyist that she listened to, and the New York Times got behind Judith Miller and promoted war and was responsible for the ramp up to war on a mismatched power without a navy, a third world country, which is America is very courageous against a third world country. So recently this monstrous woman said Putin is demented, he has a demented demeanor. And I just want to read our viewers what I wrote on 2003 in a column called Bush's 16 Words Miss the Big Picture. I was referring to Bush's bring him on grin because he said bring him on.
Yep.
His Bringemont grin I likened to the grimace one observes on the face of a demented patient with end-stage syphilis. So if Putin is demented, Bush was in 2003, and let's put them all in
the Absolutely. And as for Biden, when I look at his face, it looks like, I mean, last time I seen a face like that, it was in a mortuary slab. So, you know, on that note, I think we both agree. And this is, I guess, the thing we want to say. And we said it in January and we're saying it again because it bears repetition, that common sense needs to prevail. Wise heads need to prevail. We need to get a ceasefire. We need to ratchet everything down. And try and have a balanced view in these things. This kind of saber rattling from the Western media is unhelpful. Obviously,
get both the sides down at the table.
One question just before I go, just last thing for you. I wonder, had you heard, Alana, that the European Union decided, I think yesterday or the day before, that it was banning Russia Today, Sputnik Radio, so basically Russian-based broadcasters who broadcast across the European Union and indeed here in the UK as well. They were banning them. They were stopping them broadcasting. What's your thoughts on that?
I will one-up you and say that America led with that, because I used to watch RT, I used to watch Al Jazeera, I watch everything and I synthesize, right?
Yeah.
That's freedom. RT has long since been banned in this country. Can't get it. So there's your answer. America led with this fascistic crackdown on speech. And we dealt with Trudeau. The Anglosphere is just...
Alana, it's always amazed me, because I used to be on, Russia Today used to have me on back in the day. And they never told me what to say, because no one's going to tell me what to say.
No.
I could talk the way more or less the way we're talking.
Me too.
Yeah.
You know what? You always stimulate more thoughts in my thought process. But you know what happened? I observed it. I had my column used to appear on RT, and that was when they were very paleo libertarian, very inclined, and they had a lot of us libertarians. They had the Mises group and myself. They had me on to comment about the passing of Mandela, everything. And what happened is that they replaced all those. Mostly men I dealt with who were paleo conservatives, and they replaced them with American feminists, females. I hearken back to that awful picture you showed me, the back of this woman. The face was a little mild and misleading, but the back was frightening as she was waving a fist at... Poor Boris, but... That's what RT now is, at least the Western arm of it, is festooned with these females, and they won't have us back again because the inclination is pretty liberal.
You're right. They stopped taking me on around about 2019. They stopped me then. And I don't know why, because you know something, if they wanted to have balanced people who can, like you and I, talk about things from different perspectives, including their perspective.
But isn't that interesting, David? Because that was the old RT. They did have different people.
They did. The old one did.
Screened us, never said anything. Yeah, sometimes their faces would go gloomy when I said Mandela is things about Mandela and that. Their faces would go gloomy. They'd have a break from me for a while. But never any screening of speech. Here, you and I could not get a hearing at all.
Even though
if they've just followed the prescriptions that we are recommending here on Hard Truth, prescriptions that Kissinger followed when he negotiated, was it Korea or Vietnam or what have you in France? My history is atrocious. If they just followed... We could come to the end of this nightmare, but they won't prolong it. They have this, there's a word for it, but they have this almost, it's obscene. It's actually obscene, this war pornography that they alight on. And we're all watching this in real time, people suffering, and everybody's so asinine and stupid, they won't make use of the tools of diplomacy, decades old tools of diplomacy, that have been used by diplomats and by well-meaning people who want to represent.
Because Alana, we're not being radical. There's nothing radical about what we have said tonight. No. It's all actually used to be seen as very common sense and middle of the road. We don't want war. We want people to come together. But when I just find, I used to wonder how it was back in 1913, 1914, how did they get so many people to engage in what was called the Great War in Europe back then? How did they do it? Well, they riled them up. They got the beat of the drum beat of war going. And my only thing I can say to you is, as we finish this one, is it scares me to hear it beat so loud at the moment through the media, through social media, and voices like yours and mine are unfortunately that we are not the mainstream voice. And that worries me, because if people don't listen to us, who will they listen to? The warmongers?
Can we remind them, please, to subscribe? We've got many viewers. Without support, we get many viewers, but please subscribe so you can follow us. Yes, and once again, to go back to DSTAF, which means female, the female faction that is the most controlling, headed all the COVID lockdowns, and those people shaking their fists against Boris for not unleashing nukes if you have them. The same on our networks. You are talking about nuclear weapons.
I know.
Mutual destruction.
I know. Yeah.
This is so irresponsible is a weak word, and I don't use weak words. This is criminal. Criminal, stupid, asinine. Take the microphones away from these people.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'll take more than the microphone away from some of them. Right, Alana, we have gone past her a lot of time, but it's a big topic. And we did tackle it in January, and here we are back again, and now it's March. And I think it's right to try and speak these hard truths, which to my mind are also very common sense. And I hope, just like we said back then, let's hope that common sense will prevail and that this drumbeat is lowered so that, people can have life without a fear of a mushroom cloud or such like. Nobody wins from this, and as I say, all we can do is put out our words. But anyway, listen, it's been, as always, a pleasure.
Thanks, my friend.
Thanks for being here, Alana. Thanks, everybody. Please subscribe, make sure you do that, and we'll be back to speak with you soon. So thank you very much for everybody, and good night from us.
Bye-bye.